Welcome to your Paul Revere Show. We are here at WAUK 540 AM 101 FM every Monday night at 7. We're here focusing on how to keep Wisconsin moving forward. And tonight I'm honored to have back Matt Moreno, the chairperson of the Waukesha County Dems. I really thought it would be timely to sort of get a update on what's happening on the ground. You know, everybody's already talking about 2024 and elections, and, you know, there's the background talk about, are we going to get new maps? What's going to happen? But welcome, Matt, and I'm looking forward to hearing what you got to say.
Yeah, it's always a pleasure. Pleasure being back. I appreciate the invite.
So tell me, what's the latest sort of on the ground here in Waukesha County?
Ah, man, I mean, there's so many places to go. You know, last week we were visited by Jamie Harrison, chair of the DNC, who called the Waukesha Dems a model for the nation with what we're doing and the impact we're making and the strides we're taking. And, you know, like you said, we're coming up on several big elections, not to be overshadowed by the recent election we had of Jenna Protasiewicz, now Supreme Court Justice.
Yeah, and, you know, I think people forget Waukesha is this major wheel in all of Wisconsin politics. It is really at the heart of purple of the, you know, the state as a whole. And that purple is becoming a bluer purple rather than a redder purple. And so I just want to touch on, before we jump off into some other things, you said Jamie Harrison was here and commenting. What was it that he really sees that was so important about what you're doing?
I mean, it's the structure, the organizational, and the changes we're making on the ground. Like you said, we're becoming a bluer purple every year. So much so that Jenna Protasiewicz won the city of Waukesha, and she's the first major kind of progressive candidate to win the city in, you know, decades. So the work is being done. You know, I got the chance to, Jamie was here talking to suburban women about the issues that they're facing, like education. Kids are going back to school in a couple of weeks, and they're looking at, you know, hearing about active shooter drills and not tornado drills anymore. Climate change, abortion, all these things. And so after that, you know, me and him got a chance to chat a little bit about what we're doing, and he realized kind of what we're digging into and about how we're activating the youth, activating suburban women, utilizing a data-driven approach to really make our changes. And that's kind of where his comment came from, was that if every county party was taking the same approach that we are, that we could be seeing massive Democratic shifts around the country by copying the formula we're using here in Waukesha.
So what is that formula?
You know, the formula,
to the extent you can share it publicly.
Yeah, for me, it's always been a show up first mentality. You know, we will never outspend Republicans. We will never control the billionaires that they do, but we can out hustle them in every single day we do. So we show up at every parade, every community event, every fair or festival or farmer's market that the communities will let us show up at, we're at, because we want to talk to people. At the county fair, we are there to engage. We're not there to sell stuff or hustle or push things. We just want to engage with people, because when you shut up and listen for a few minutes, you're going to learn a lot more about what people are thinking than if you're trying to push an agenda on them. So at the county fair, we saw thousands of people engage with hundreds of people, activated and signed up hundreds of new members. And a lot of us just listening, hearing what's going on in their lives and learning from it so that we can tailor our message to better serve the people of the county.
At the ground level, what are people thinking and what are they saying?
At the ground level, there's a lot of concern about our school boards. We've seen it everywhere. You know, the Waukesha County Republicans love to talk about their WISRED initiative. They love saying that this is a Republican community and they should have Republican representatives. They brag that they recruit, vet, and train their these candidates. And we're now seeing the results and paying the price for it. In Heartland, we had a member of their school board go to jail for 30 days because he committed fraud by saying he lived in a place he did not. And his father, who was also on the school board, just got censured. Those two, as the Republican Party says, were recruited, vetted, and trained by Republicans to be on that school board. And that's the result that we're paying for the Republicans putting politics ahead of their communities.
So As you sit and talk to people, what are they thinking about the fact that this is the result of a WIS-red far-right takeover of the school board in Heartland? What do you see them doing?
It's a big concern. I mean, we meet, you know, Republicans or conservatives who say, look, I may vote Republican. I voted for Scott Walker. I voted for Ron Johnson. I probably even voted for Trump. But when it came to my school board, I wasn't used to this partisan level of politics, and I really don't think it belongs here. Because school boards, if you think about it, it's mostly like what your coaches, parents who are getting their kids into schools. And now it's becoming this big thing that the Republicans are actively trying to recruit the most radical conservative candidates they can find and making it a partisan school board versus a school board that just really focuses on what's best for the kids. Recruiting and training great teachers, having great curriculums, you know, making sure your schools are a good place to be. And now it's turning into how can we send political messages?
You know, sort of ironic, the messaging of the far right has always been on this alleged voter fraud, right? That's been virtually non-existent in the state of Wisconsin. I mean, you know, the percentage is, you know, de minimis. And now you have, I think it was John Hart was the son, right, that was actually convicted.
Yep.
Did time in jail,
yep. Right?
Or in Huber. Or...
He was sentenced to 30 days in jail, and he was fined over $3,000 or $4,000 for fraud because he said he lived somewhere he did not, and he voted somewhere he did not live. He committed voter fraud.
It seems like he got a pretty light sentence.
You know, you're the lawyer on this one. You're the attorney, not me.
I really think that's sort of ironic on this whole WIS-red push, you know, that somehow schools weren't being run fairly. And then you have, you know, two board members, albeit it's Heartland, one community. But I mean, that's, you know, pretty significant.
It's very significant. I think it raises a lot of questions about who exactly the Republicans are recruiting, how they are allegedly vetting these people, and what support they're giving them and what impact that has on the communities as a whole. I mean, book bans are hitting Waukesha County, and it's not from liberals.
You brought up the book bans. What's the response been to the book ban?
There's been a ton of pushback. I mean, you look at the Journal Sentinel or Fox 6 News any couple of weeks, and you're going to see record turnout at school board meetings as Republicans and conservatives push banning books or firing teachers over songs they want to play for their classes, changes in policies, dictating what pronouns kids can use or what given names teacher call them. I mean, look, I'm legally Matthew, and if my teachers would have called me Matthew in high school, I would have not have been a happy camper because I'm Matt. So I don't understand why, you know, it's any different for somebody who wants to go by a different thing than their government legal name. But again, this is the focus that they have. In Menominee Falls, there was open records request given that showed that there's been talk among secret of them trying to change or shut down the public library in Menominee Falls. And that had record pushback, huge attendance at board meetings to push back on that. And again, all of this comes out because we are finding things they're doing in secret behind closed doors.
Is there any type of formal organization developing an opposition to the WIS-red takeover?
You know, I don't know if there's a formal group yet popping up, but there's been a lot of talk among parents. We've seen parents coming together throughout Waukesha in response to the Rainbow teacher being fired. There's been responses in Lake Country among parents getting more involved as they see just how bad it's getting, the impact that's happening on their children. They are kind of naturally coming together, as you do with any natural political movement. Really starts with the people who are impacted first, and that's what we're seeing. The Waukesha Dems are definitely starting to take a more proactive approach, realizing that, look, we want to go back to the old days where parents and community members did their school board stuff, and there was no political drama. It was just a lot of just what's best for Brookfield or what's best for Waukesha. But we've seen that that cannot be trusted to be real anymore, because the Walks or Republicans would rather score political points than let our kids have the best education possible.
So it, the elections in 2024 are not going to be involved with school board, will they?
I mean, we'll have a lot of school board races coming up in the spring of 2024. You know, this will be one of the first springs in a while that we haven't had a statewide race on the Supreme Court level. So it'll be a ton of energy focused on voter turnout and voter education. Look, there's not going to be a multi-million dollar TV campaign for the April elections. So it's going to be us organizing on the ground, activating volunteers, talking to parents, talking to families, and getting those folks out to vote. And luckily, standing here today, you know, or sitting here today, I can say that the Waukesha Dems have the most recruited and well-trained volunteers of any county party in the state that are ready to go in 2024 and make sure that we deliver wins in April and deliver bigger wins in November.
So the before we get into, I'm really sort of interested in the recruiting and training component, but before we get into that, how does this, just touching back on the WISRED, what kind of impact have you seen amongst people about the fact that John Hart was convicted? Are people talking about that?
Absolutely. I mean, it has been a hot topic of conversation in their district. It's been a conversation around the entire county, because you can't proudly throw your name behind someone like WISRED, or like the WISRED group did with him, have him go to jail and expect nothing to come of that. I mean, I think his father was censured as a response to it, because they know that there is going to be a groundswell of people who are upset that the Republicans started this initiative to do this and that the results have been this catastrophically terrible.
What kind of response has WISRED had to this? I mean, are they
silent? Dead silence. I mean,
just crickets.
You know, when they started, they avoided the press at all costs. And then this past cycle, when they realized they could no longer run away from it, they owned it by saying, hey, look, we're conservative, Waukesha's conservative, we're going to own it. And now they're dead silent once again, nowhere to be found.
Folks, this is Attorney Mark Thompson. This is your Paul Revere Show. We'll be right back with Matt Moreno for more in terms of what's happening in Waukesha. Welcome back, folks. This is Attorney Mark Thompson. This is your Paul Revere Show. We are here every Monday night at WAUK 540 AM 101 FM. I am really pleased to have with us tonight Matt Moreno, who's the chairperson of the Waukesha County Dems. We're here at Ground Zero in the state. This is, purple Wisconsin, and the bluer that purple is, the better chance democracy is, in my view, humble view, has going forward. So we spent a lot of time talking about the WISRED, meaning the far-right Republicans' attempt. Well, actually, not attempt. They did take over most of the school boards.
100% did. Absolutely. And we're paying the price for it.
Right? And also, we're like eyes wide open now that we have John Harder convicted of voter fraud. So this is, folks, pay attention, see what you can do. Let's go save our school boards and give our kids a future. But back to you, Matt. What is it in this recruiting and training on the ground here that has really made the progressives and actually, you know, the Democratic Party relevant in Waukesha?
Yeah, I think it's a couple things. You know, there's a general philosophy that I carry is that to move the country forward where we want to go, there's a role for everybody, and everybody has a role. You know, as much as door knocking is important, and I'm the biggest fan of door knocking, I love knocking on doors, we need everybody to show up. You can't knock? Great, make phone calls. You can't make phone calls? Help us send text. Can't send text? Make a casserole. People need to be fed. Everybody has a role to play. And we have to start by honoring everybody who shows up that wants to play a role. Furthermore, it's education. Look, to be a powerful volunteer, you need two things. You need a story. Why do you care? What's in it for you? What's making you sacrifice the time watching football or baseball or hanging out with your family to do this? And you need some facts. You need some knowledge. You need to know that now one year past the Inflation Reduction Act, Wisconsin has added several hundred jobs and committed $3.1 billion in private investment from a vote that Joe Biden and Tammy Baldwin put through and every single Republican voted against. Little bit of facts and a lot of passion is going to be the key to getting every volunteer active and ready to go and making a huge impact when they meet with their neighbors and friends.
So taking that, how are you taking that out to Waukesha County, that fact? And what's the significance of that, you know, legislation that got passed?
Yeah, so look, the Inflation Reduction Act is not a perfect bill. I think that's a great place to start, is that whenever we as Democrats pitch stuff, it's always upsetting because we don't get everything we want. So sometimes we struggle to admit how good something is. It's not a perfect bill. Let me start off with that. But it does a lot of good. And for Waukesha, it does extra good that a lot of places might not feel, because Waukesha is lucky to be a very privileged community with a lot of wealth. So in Waukesha, if you buy a new oven, new stove, update your refrigerator, put some insulation in your house, buy an electric car, you're getting huge tax dollars back in from your federal government tax returns to do these things. So we're taking families who are middle-class families who maybe have a little wiggle room but not a ton. Maybe they want to go solar. Takes 30% off their bill through a federal tax incentive. That is huge in a county like Waukesha because it takes people who are maybe on the fence about this and it puts it in play for them. You know, when you want to buy an electric car, maybe you're concerned about the charging infrastructure, and now knowing that you can save $7,500 is huge. It gets the family who was on the fence, gets them to do the right thing. Waukesha County, you know, these young families who are moving in, they care about the environment. It's one of the biggest things we hear from families when we're knocking on doors is that they're very concerned about climate change. We see it every day. It was 100 plus degrees last week. Of course we know it's happening.
There's a rumor that it's going to be 111 in Milwaukee on Wednesday, right?
I'm going to ignore that. I'm going to ignore that rumor. So families care about this stuff. So when the government does incentives, like we've always done in the history of this country, we incentivize the things we want to have happen. It gets families that financial protection to take that next step and do the right thing for themselves. And it saves energy bills in the process. But even better, it creates jobs. In Wisconsin alone, we're going to be creating tens of thousands of jobs by the time this full bill is implemented and seeing tens of billions of dollars in investment in manufacturing. Remember the great Foxconn that we were pitched by Donald Trump and Scott Walker?
How can you forget?
I mean, it doesn't exist anymore, so that could be how you forget. But this is actually doing those things. We are seeing manufacturing jobs coming back to Wisconsin at record numbers because of the incentives put in place by the Inflation Reduction Act. And that's what we take out to the county. That's how we talk to these folks about it. People who are getting good union family supporting jobs.
So what do you think progressives have to do to actually get this message out more, you know, more broadly?
I think we just need to keep showing up. We keep showing up. We keep talking. I also think that it's really important that this isn't just progressives. You know, Waukesha kind of like says purple. The thing I love most about being a Democrat is we are a big tent party. We have, you know, Joe Manchin and Tammy Baldwin in the same party, a liberal gay senator from Wisconsin and a very moderate conservative from West Virginia in the same party. And we accept both of them equally. We may not always agree on everything, but they're part of the Democratic Party. And in Waukesha, it's the same way. We have conservative, moderate, gun-owning, truck-driving, blue-collar workers, and we have liberal attorneys in the same party because we recognize that we're a big tent all moving in the same direction of forward. And no matter what the Democratic Party vision of America is, when we are knocking on doors, we make sure that you know you have a place in our vision. And Republicans can't say that because in Republicans' vision of the future, a lot of people are left out.
Yeah, you know, I think this whole book banning thing is part of that process, right? I mean, if you're out there telling people what your children can't read, you've already put limitations on it. I get 10 seconds. What would you say to folks listening in terms of what they need to do to help Wisconsin move forward?
Show up. You know, I know it's hard. I know it's tiring. I know there's always things we want to be doing instead. But spending 2 hours a week from now until November of next year will guarantee a Biden-Baldwin reelection and the death of Donald Trump and the MAGA movement here in Wisconsin.
You heard that here, folks, on the Paul Revere Show. Matt Moreno, 2 hours a week, and we're guaranteed democracy. We'll be right back on the other side. Thank you very much, Matt Moreno. This is your Paul Revere Show.
Thanks, Mark. Take care.
Hey, good evening, folks. This is Attorney Mark Thompson. This is your Paul Revere Show. We are here on WAUK 540 AM 101 FM every Monday night from 7 to 8. We are right here live on Main Street in Waukesha, the heart of Waukesha County, which is really going to be bellwether in terms of where our state goes, whether we're going to have democracy or we're going to go live, you know, I don't know, 1840, you know, let's not go back there, folks. But before I have my next guest on, Luann Bird, I just wanted a little announcement. This is sort of insider talk. The Wisconsin Elections Commission, I have the privilege of serving on it. The current administrator is Megan Wolf. And there was no vacancy in that spot. She's, you know, with a reputation stellar all across the country, recognized as one of the leaders on elections, fair elections, you know, honest elections, secure elections. You know, she's got clearance with the FBI and Homeland Security. And even though there was no opening for that spot, the Senate decided they were going to have a hearing and vote to whether or not they could confirm her. Well, the Wisconsin Legislative Council issued a press release or a legal opinion August 21st, 2023, saying that there is no vote from the Wisconsin Election Commission unless there are four for an administrator. So the 3-0 vote that was taken is meaningless. And so just a heads up, folks, the Senate, they're going to have a committee hearing tomorrow, but they don't have a legal motion pending on the floor. So just pay attention to that. Heads up here. Welcome, Luann.
Well, thank you for having me, and hello, listeners.
And so you have been very, very busy recently. Bird on a wire. What is bird on a wire?
Well, when the campaign ended, and we were all very sad, a lot of us, that I lost.
Yeah, just remind listeners, you ran for what
spot? I ran for the State Assembly, the 84th District, against Bob Donovan, and we lost by just 2%. So I would say we made a really good dent and that people really appreciated.
And that was in a gerrymandered district.
Yes, very
that was,
gerrymandered.
That was
right.
Really rigged against you.
Right.
So and you almost beat them even though they didn't have you on a fair playing field, right?
That's right. That's right. And I attribute that to a lot of things. I think the one thing that worked really well for me were the conversations. When I go knock at doors, I just have a way of getting people to want change or giving them some hope that we can do things different and that I was a better choice, you know. So I still think if I could have got to a few more people, started a little earlier, we could have won. But the conversations were powerful. Dan Schaefer with the recombobulation area came with me, knocked on doors, watched how I did that, and then wrote a nice article about my campaign and me and what I was trying to do. then when the election was over, he said, you should do podcasts. Let's keep those conversations going. And that's exactly what happened. So I did a number of them with Dan Schaefer on his recombobulation area. And that rolled into working with Civic Media. Which
here
I
you are, folks. This is Civic Media, WAUK 540 AM.
Right.
And so, full disclosure, Civic Media is actively promoting Bird on a Wire. So tell the listeners.
That's right.
What is this podcast? How do you find it? And what are the issues?
It's on the Civic Media website. And if you look under shows, under weekly, that's when you'll find it. It's also aired on this station on 540 AM and 101 FM on Saturdays and Sundays at 3 o'clock. It's the same one played twice. The issues vary. I started with Civic Media talking to Tyler Kelly, a young gentleman who has done a lot of work on gun reforms. And he talked a lot about the lockdown generation and what we're doing to kids in our schools. And then I had a great conversation with Alan Borsick from the Journal Sentinel. And you know, he's been studying education for years, and something great comes out of every one of these podcasts. I learn something new, and it gives me hope. And sometimes maybe it gives me more reason to work harder for some of these progressive issues. Like educating every kid in Milwaukee, it's a high standard, but you know that's what I would like to see.
Educating every kid in the state, right?
And then I had a wonderful conversation with the League of Women Voters. People don't know what the League all does, and I'm a 30-year member, so that was great. We also had.
So why don't you just give a shout out? What do you do as a member?
As a member of the League,
What do you do?
Save democracy. We do a lot of registering of voters. We want to make sure that people are informed. We want to make sure that we also study issues and we take positions on issues and have different committees that are working on things like the environment and public education and gun reforms and particularly women's rights lately. That's really. But when voting rights were under attack, that's when the membership went way up in Milwaukee County and the area. There's more than just Milwaukee County members. So that's what the League does. I joined the League when Phil was paralyzed, my husband, and I didn't know what to do. How do you deal with the schools weren't wheelchair accessible? And I joined the League, and they taught me how to form a committee and how to take action. And it was a life-changing moment for me. So I'm very appreciative of the action part of the League.
So, you know, one thing was, you know, guns in Wisconsin, guns in the United States are looking in the news every night. Somebody's getting killed. Somebody's getting shot. I'm a hunter, you know, I like going hunting. Mm-hmm. And what are you learning about where people are at on the, you know, Bird on a Wire? And what are people thinking about guns,
you know,
and where do we need to go?
Not just guns, but I also had Will Radler from the Rosarium, the Rose Garden in Greenfield. He wanted to come on and tell his story. He's 80 years old, and he's been gay. He knew it since he was 9. He wanted to tell that story. So what I'm learning is that these issues, gay, LGBTQ plus, I didn't say that right, they're under attack right now. And the more we do these podcasts, the more we can bring out stories, real stories of people, so that is how we can, help people understand these issues at a deeper level, including guns, you know, talking about my nephew or talking about young people that we're into the second generation now since Columbine of, you know, the Columbine kids now have kids in schools and, you know, learning that side of issues that different people have. It's very powerful. I do have to share my husband. You know, I always wanted to get him to talk a little bit about his life because I talk about him so much. He said he'd never do a podcast. Well, then I called up his brother, John, because John's a veteran. And I called up his brother, Joe, because he's a veteran. So put in a little plug. So there was all three of these bird men in my backyard talking about veterans issues, talking about their military experience. And they had never really done that. They had never really come together like that. That's going to be aired this weekend. So be sure and keep, tune in if you're very interested in that. John, there were eight in Phil's family, 8 siblings, and all five guys served in the military at different times. So it was really a powerful experience. There were tears. I was surprised that, you know, as one brother told his story, what happened to him in the military, he contracted Guillain-Barré, and how that came down was very sad. So it was, these conversations are important.
So how do these conversations relate to building a consensus on what we can do to allow hunters to hunt, to recognize the Second Amendment, but regulate AR-15s and guns in general? What are you learning?
I'm learning that language matters, that when I knocked on all those doors when I ran last time, people really agree that we need to do something on guns. And there's real consensus out there about certain things. And people would tell me that. I was there to listen to people.
Where's the consensus?
Consensus is around what? It's around background checks for everybody. It's around people who are going to harm themselves or others. We should be able to get those guns away. That's the IRPA law, Extreme Risk Protection Act, that's out there. We should have gun locks. None of these proven policies that have worked in other states take away Second Amendment rights. So I think we have to talk about it in this way, that we are Second Amendment rights people. However, when your right to own a gun and you're not responsible enough to own that gun, we need to be careful not to allow you to keep that gun until you're better. And when I think about it's a deadly action when, and suicide now. The statistics are showing that the number one killer of youth is guns. We better pay attention to that. So there really is consensus out there. But when you hear someone say this, and this happened to me in a meeting, I went in to talk to Senator Bradley. I go to his listening sessions. And I talk about my nephew who took his own life recently in May. And I wanted him to sign on to that Extreme Risk Protection Act. Well, here's where it gets a little tricky. He says, we already have that in law, Chapter 51, but the Chapter 51 law is very different than the Extreme Risk Protection Act because there's so many restrictions in there before you have to commit somebody before you can get a gun away. You have to have a diagnosis, and that isn't always the case. So we have to clarify things and hold people accountable to those kinds of statements. And during that meeting, one other person, constituent that was there, said, guns don't kill people. And that just caused a very strong reaction in someone sitting across. And after the meeting was over, I went up to this woman and I said, what did you mean by that? What are you really trying to say? Are you trying to say that we should leave people who are going to harm themselves and others, should we let them have guns? Well, no, but knives kill people and buses, they can get run over by a bus and... Okay, so still, what does that mean? And digging a little deeper got her thinking about why she makes that statement. Do you say that just to make people mad? Do you say that to try to get someone to think differently about guns? And I think it's that. I think it's a statement that's meant to shut people down or, you know, protect my right to own a gun. So if we just reaffirm that we want to protect your right to own a gun too, this isn't about taking guns away. And then I had the same conversation with a relative over the weekend who gets really worked up about guns. And I said, you really sound upset about this. What is going on there? And then, you know, talked about those like kids in Milwaukee, those parents should be doing a better job and blah, blah, blah. But I said, do you really think that a person who is going to harm themselves or someone else should have a gun? Well, no. I mean, it really is the art of language here. And the art of listening and the art of trying to understand where other people are at rather than convince them of where I'm at. Because that, I think people care. It's my experience, people care. So if we can get past some of their fears about what they think this legislation is, I think we can find that consensus. And I feel like the winds are blowing in our direction. Parents and teachers going back to school are telling me they are worried that this is the year they could lose their kids in schools. That's got to stop, Mark. That's just got to stop.
So what's the trick on this? You know, I mean, we have these discussions, and we've been having these discussions for years and years and years, and we don't seem to get across a finish line.
I think you have to be relentless, just like people were relentless over changing the laws in Wisconsin to get smoking out of restaurants and bars because they saw the harm of secondhand smoke. The research is there. So the research is here on guns. We just have to be relentless. So I went to Senator Bradley's listening session. I need to follow up on that now. I've got a little video of him because that's legal to do, and I'm going to, you know, I'm doing my research and talking to other legislators, and I will be able to go back, be relentless, and make sure that he signs on to the IRPA law because he told me that he doesn't think someone who'd harm themselves or each other should have a gun.
Here we are, folks. Luann Byrd, this is your Paul Revere Show. This is Attorney Mark Thompson. We'll be back on the other side to talk more with Luann Byrd on what we can do to keep Wisconsin moving forward. Welcome back, folks. This is Attorney Mark Thompson. This is your Paul Revere Show. I am delighted to have Luann Byrd here with us tonight. Becoming famous for her Bird on a Wire podcast, and we talking about how one has to be relentless to keep going forward, meaning you can never, ever, ever give up. But before we jump back to Luann, Mark?
Yeah.
Hey, Mark.
Hey, it just strikes me as that, you know, I grew up, throughout the 60s and was dreaming about hunting, you know, long before I had a firearm. But I can remember reading the old magazines back in the late 60s there. So I subscribed to a few of them, Field & Stream, Sports of Field & Outdoor. I've got, had all three of them. And I can remember from back then that the idea of somebody having a firearm out in the field there, you're shooting, you know, with 15 rounds in the magazine and popping them all off with a semi-automatic would have been kind of anathema to most of the people back in the, even most NRA members. And it's just what's remarkable to me is the sales job that the firearms industry has done, you know, to convince people that they need that kind of firearm out in the field in certain applications for hunting. I saw one guy that was hog hunting. He said, "Oh, I need 30 rounds in my magazine because you never know about those hogs." And
all I can say, Mark,
is shocking to me.
Yeah, well, he needs to go learn how to shoot. You know, I mean, if it takes 15 shells to get the hog, then you probably shouldn't be out there shooting hogs. But thank you so much, Mark, for the.
Mark, I want to just say, Mark is right, though, about we have to challenge the industry. We have to challenge those that are putting the messages out there because they're having, it goes back to language, right? And thank you for bringing that up, Mark. We do. We need to go back to the manufacturers and make sure that they're telling the truth here about guns and what we can be doing to save lives with simple things like gun locks.
We're not going to get the truth from the industry, but we can hold the industry accountable.
There you go. Okay. Thank you. Yeah.
I agree 100%.
Hold them accountable to the truth,
not,
I should say.
You know, their business is selling guns.
That's right.
And so they're going to tell us we need them, whether we need them or not.
We don't care if they sell guns. We want them to sell them with gun locks, and we want them to sell them to people who are responsible gun owners. So we just have to be relentless on that.
And I think, you know, that just legally, that all the cases around the country that I'm aware of that have gone to the Court of Appeals and the federal court system have all said that AR-15s are guns that one can regulate, you know. And this goes back to Mark. You know, when you're out there hunting, you get, you know, five shots, you know, you don't need an AR-15 with a banana clip. I mean, that is not
I heard that
hunting.
At the doors, too, when I was running. A lot of people told me that. So we just have to stay at it. We have to be relentless. We have to pick up the phone and tell your personal stories. You know, I run into veterans who say, "We don't need those guns here. We used them in war. We don't need them here." And those are the people we have to get also to call their legislators and tell them that.
Amen.
We can do it.
Amen, Luann. So, but here, on an issue that you mentioned earlier, the ADA, you know, you've been handling that legal, you know, concept
for a long time.
33 years.
Okay, so, and that's relentless. So
that's relentless.
Yeah, so why don't you just sort of give us some background on that and, you know, give us sort of an update and where issues are and whether you got any recent stories about ADA.
I always do. Well, that's when my husband was paralyzed. That's what started the whole issue for me because I valued him. I valued him as a father, as a husband. I valued that he should, you know, we went from participating in society to all of a sudden there were all these barriers out there. But then we also had the law, but it was signed 8 days after he was paralyzed. So it took me a number of years to figure out how to work with organizations rather than sit home and complain about them. You know, I had to take a typing class so I could learn to write letters, and I learned that there was a school board. I ran for the school board. I got on the board, got all the schools in Oshkosh wheelchair accessible. There's countless...
Right, I think that's an important point. People forget that just because a law is passed doesn't mean it's in effect the next day, right?
That's right.
It has to become a living thing.
That's right. And when you see that there are places that are not accessible, it's up to us to point that out. It happens more often than you would think, Mark. I mean, society is so much...
happens every day.
It does. And it's so much better than it was when Phil got out of the hospital in 1990, but it still happens a lot. So I worked on ADA issues for years, and then I move to Hales Corners, and I end up on the school board there just as a community member, because nobody else was running, and I went in the superintendent's office to talk about something else, and he said, you should, get on the school board, and that's how I ended up on the board. Then I discovered there were a lot of ADA places in the district that were just not up to standards. And then this person had come to the board who had a child that she had to lay on the floor to change them, a child with a disability, and so... eventually, I got a whole assessment done. I had to. It's a good thing I was board president because there's always pushback. So once we got the assessment done, we could see that all the buildings weren't accessible, and we took it out to the public, and they passed a referendum. So two districts I was able to get fixed. Then they asked me I had to get off the board because Phil had a stroke in 2017. And then they asked me, the library director asked me to get involved.
Which library?
In the Hales Corners Friends of the Library asked me to get involved in that.
And do we have issue there
today? So it turns out when I first got there, they ran this beautiful wine tasting because I love libraries. I kind of love wine too, I'll have to admit. And anyway,
folks, there's no wine in the room.
That's right. Not right now. But so I go to this event and it's held on two levels in the library. And right away I noticed there's no elevator. But I was working on school, so I thought, okay, and besides, Phil doesn't come to those things. So I was like, okay, it's not really affecting me personally, even though I know it's not right. Well, then I noticed where they held the story time. I took my grandsons to those. That room was way too small. My husband could have never got in there. Then I noticed, as president of the Friends, I was invited to go to all the other events. And then I noticed how their Dr. Seuss program, you had to go downstairs to get to the program, and then upstairs to get to sign up. I mean, they were clearly using two levels that was inappropriate. Now, both levels you can get into from the outside, but there was no path inside. So to make a long story short.
Right, we got 30 seconds. Wrap it up.
I was on committees to try to get this done. I finally had to file a complaint with the ADA. I filed that in December, I'm happy to tell you, with the Office of the United States Office of Department of Education, Office of Civil Rights. I'm happy to tell you, Mark, that moved everything forward, the determination. We're still arguing whether they need the elevator or not, but they can no longer discriminate at that library like they used to.
Folks, Luann Bird, a model of relentless forward thinking. Thank you so much for being here, Luann.
Oh, you're welcome.
You know, you'll be back, I'm sure. Folks, we do need to figure out how to go forward. That is the state's motto. Thank you all for listening. Attorney Mark Thompson, this is your Paul Revere Show. Have a great night.